Start your day at 2:08, Rabbi Yitzi Fulda.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for having me back. It's always a privilege and a schus. And today's topic is a topical theme, and it's quite appropriate this time of year, since we just had Pesach, which people know, Pesach is a lot about talking, and Paroi is Peh Ra. And we're in the mitzvah of Sirus HaOmer, which is done with our mouths as well. So I thought it would be a geshmaka discussion, conversation, to discuss the power of the mouth in verbal commitments. And we'll be discussing today specifically Afikoman presents and people's commitments when they make them to give Afikoman presents. So we'll start off with a very specific shayla and use it as a springboard to discuss many of the different halachas that arise. So there was a gentleman called Mr. Chaim Fleischberg, and he had recently moved to Eretz Yisrael into a very nice neighborhood. And he always had a dream. His dream was to have guests aside from his very close family members, who people feel more comfortable to have them. He wanted guests that were completely random and to be mekayem the mitzvah of having proper knas arkim in his seder. So he phoned up a local yeshiva, and it happened to be a yeshiva for beginners, for Bali Tshuva. And he assumed that there'll be Bokrim there who couldn't go home for Yom Tov to Chutz Laretz. And he found three prospective attendees for his Seder. And so he invited them, and they agreed to come, and they were very excited. He was very excited. Finally, his dream come true. And when it came to Yachatz, in his Seder, he explained to the whole Seder table what their family minhag was with regards to stealing and ransoming the Afikoman. And one of the members, one of the Bochrim who he invited, was called Shimon Heller. And Shimon Heller thought to himself, this is a grand opportunity. I have to get that matzah, get that. He thought it was a great opportunity. So when it came, he cunningly stepped up, stepped around, picked up the matzah, and excused himself and said he just had to go outside for a few minutes, and he hid the matzah. And came to the end of Shulchan Aruch, and Baal HaSeder, Mr. Chaim Fleischberg, he says, I've looked, I can't find the matzah anywhere, who stole the matzah? And Shimon, he started to blush, and he said, I stole it. And he said, no, Shimon, I'm so happy you got involved in the Seder so much. You so felt so comfortable and you got involved. What would you like? So Shimon said, I'd like to just tell everyone why I want what I want before I tell you what I want. He said, my first year in yeshiva is rapidly coming to an end. And sadly, my father just lost his job. And my mother is really struggling to put food on the table. And I'm really, really shagging in yeshiva at the moment. Really shagging. And I know if I go back to America at the end of the year and I'm not coming back here to yeshiva next year, everything's gone. But I can't afford another $24,000 for next year's yeshiva fees. And I can't afford the $6,000 that will cost for the spending money. So Mr. Fleischberg, would you please give me $30,000 for my Afikoman present? And everyone at the table was crying. It was so emotional. The story it just spoke to their heart. And Mr. Fleischberg, from being happy that his guest was involved in a seder, his face was very pale, and he didn't anticipate such a large request. And he was thinking to himself, and suddenly he felt a tear trickle down his face. And he remembered the young Chaim Fleischberg, who never had the chance to go to yeshiva. And he thought to himself, quick, cheshbon, accounts, cheshbon, can I work this out? Can I make this work? And he thought to himself, you know what, I think we can scrape this one through. He stood up and he said, in front of the whole Seder table, said, Shimon, it's on me. Year next year in Yeshiva, it's on me. $30,000. Everyone was singing and dancing. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Came to the end of Pesach and regret slowly set in. And Chaim was very, very, very sad. Slight depression set in. And then, to make matters worse, he received a letter about a week after Pesach, around this time, that sadly he's been demoted from his job, and he's going to be earning considerably less. So his wife noticed that he couldn't function anymore, and she said, you have to go and speak to Rob, and go find out if there's any way that you can back out of your commitment. At the end of the day, you never signed anything. You never gave a deposit. All you did was, you just said you're going to give it. So maybe we can find a way to weasel our way out of this huge matana. So that's the question that we're going to be discussing today that I brought before you. So has anyone got a first glance opinion on what they think should be the halacha in such a case? A smachta. Okay. Why should it be an asmachta? It's a huge amount. So he understood what he was doing. He thought it through. So posting over here don't say that there's a problem with asmachta. They seem to say there's a different discussion over here.
Forced.
Sorry?
The force.
Oh, so was he under duress? Was he being forced into this situation over here? Would anyone feel that they can't back out of being asked for $30,000? Quite a large request. Should feel quite comfortable, right? Sorry? Oh. You could say we'll discuss it afterwards. Like when people get questions in a shir and they don't know the answer, say we'll discuss it afterwards. But there's that would be one topic. But the big question is, when you've got a commitment and you make a verbal commitment, then is it binding? Is there anything which binds you to what you pledged? Oh, so we'll get there, and we'll see if that's going to be what we're going to say.
There's no tekiyas kaf.
So there's three daragas in halacha. There's a kinyan, where you make a kinyan that works, and that's binding. You can't retract, you can't go back. There's a level lower than that. That's where you've done a kinyan that didn't work. What would be an example if you've done a kinyan that didn't work? Is if you'd pay for an item, you'd pay money for something. We know that when you pay for something, generally, not with a non-Jewish person, but let's say you go to a Jew and you buy from him a bike and you pay him, then you don't yet own the bike, but you've paid money for the bike. Once you've paid money for it, then there'll be a mishapara, a curse for you to backtrack on your arrangement and your agreement, even though you've not yet done a kinyan mishicha, or a kinyan chotzer. That is level two. But there's a level lower than that, and that's the level we're going to be discussing today. The level we're going to be discussing today is something called Mechusa Amona. Mechusa Amona, what does that mean? What's the translation of Mechusa Amona? Mechusa Amona means lack of trustworthiness. And it's a very negative title given to someone who backs out of a verbal agreement. And this is found in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Mem Tes, also Daf Mem Ches, and it applies to situations where people agree on a deal. I'm going to buy your house, and he says, yes, I'll sell you my house, I'm going to do, this applies to so many different areas, I'm going to do you a favor, I'm going to give you a present, the Gemara discusses. In all these situations, we're going to have to discuss the problem of something called Mechusa Amona. Now, Mechusa Amona, there's a machlokes about in the Gemara, but we pass to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that there is an Issa of Mechusa Amona. Now, how chumradik is this Issa? Now, it might be based on a pasuk of bittul aseh. It might be a mitzvah derabbanon. It might be just an issa derabbanon. But the poskim discuss that if you break a verbal agreement, then we can call you a rasha, and we should publicly shame you to give you the correct motivation to stick true to your word. So what's everyone's shaking with fear, then they've heard the chumrah of this inyan, then I want to know, when's it going to apply? Is there any exceptions to this halacha? And what are the parameters? So the first thing we have to discuss is what it says in the Gemara. The Gemara says that when does this halacha apply? It applies to a small present. Yeah? So everyone's thinking already, this case with Chaim was a huge present. The question is, why does it only apply to a small present? Can anyone think why it should only apply to a small present? Who won't be disappointed? The recipient. So the Gemara details exactly why not. And the Gemara says that with a small present, then the recipient had smichus das that he was actually going to receive it. That's what the Gemara says. Now when you say to someone you're going to give them something small, they believe it. And they trust that you're actually going to do it. Whereas when it's a very large present, then they don't. They don't think that. So what do we think? Do we think that that might apply to our case? Yes or no? On the one hand, it was a very large present. But on the other hand, the context and the way that it was pledged was in a very believable way. But can we stretch the words of the Gemara or not? So Lemaisa, the Poskim discuss that this concept of matana, mu'etes, they call it, a small present, is just a category title. And it would apply to any case where the recipient would trust that the noisein, that the giver, is actually for real and going to give this present. That would be when this din would apply. And this would even apply if the recipient thinks that the noisein is rich. There's a lot of people who, apparently, they're not rich, but they look rich. I've heard this from accountants in other venues, that there's people who are mamish struggling, but the way that they present themselves is in a very, very lavish way, and they mamish look like they're very, very rich. And that would really, really work against their favor in such a situation, because if the recipient perceives that they're what's it called, they can handle such a matana, and it will be normal for them to give such a matana, then they would have this problem with chus amon. There's actually a nice story about this with Reb Kiva Eger. Reb Kiva Eger was once visiting a town where he had arranged a place to stay. And it was by one of the more pshutei ha'am where he planned to stay. And the people of the town found out that Reb Kiva Eger was coming to town. And they hijacked his cart and they took him to stay by the Rosh HaKahal. And that Friday night, Reb Kiva Eger was talking about Mechusa Amona in Shul. And he said that, Lemaisa, I told my guests that I was going to come to stay to them, and I backed out. I reneged from my agreement, so maybe I should maybe ask the Mechila. It was Ba'inus, but still, he was just trying to bring out a point. He said that, I know it's a very small matana for me to come and stay by them, but the recipients perceived me coming to stay by them as a huge, huge present. So they never had smichus das, so therefore there's no mechusa amona. You're just trying to bring out a point. But Rabbi Yosef Fleischman, in his Sefer Mishpatei Yosha, he brings a whole list of cases where we would say there's smichus das, even though we're talking about a large present. I'll just read you out the list. One or two of the things, or a few of them. So if the gift giver, the noisein, he made a shvur that he was going to give it, then it shows very, very clear sincerity to give it. What happens if he bragged about giving the matana? He's bragged about it, he's showing off to his friends, I'm going to give this present. In such a situation as well, he would also be mechuyev to keep his word. Another situation, I want to hear if anyone comes up with a good kasha based on the next thing I'm going to say, based on the story we just spoke about, is that in a situation where the person is a very reliable person, very reliable person who never ever, like, he doesn't break his word. Such a person, if he says that he's going to do something, then even if it's a matana meruba, he has to be kind as well. What's the kasha? Rekivega. How does that shim with the story? So I was thinking of a terrence that maybe the answer would be that. Oh, so we're going to get to circumstances changing in a minute. But they also might have understood, Mr. Harris, they also might have understood that people might find out about it and therefore he might not be able to keep his word because it'll be hard for him to, can't say? it wasn't just they agreed that he's a reliable person, but the other people in the town might want to quickly schlep him off somewhere. So therefore, they might not ask Smith of Zas for a different reason. But it's a very good question. A lot of people in Kodal asked that question on the story. If you're related to the person, then that also is going to be another reason why the person is going to have a lot more smith as that. So we're going to get to children soon, later on, because this shayla wasn't with a child, it was with a bacher. So that's with regards to that. So we've just brought out that the common denominator amongst all these exceptions to the words of the Gemara, the tight ruling of the Gemara, is that the Gemara said matana muetes, but it would even apply to matana maruba if there would be smichas das. Why would there be smichas das? For all the different possible reasons that we quoted. Now, the next part of the shayla I want to discuss with you is when a person says they're going to give money to someone in the future, what does that mean? What are they saying? Are they saying that I've got a big pile of money hidden stashed underneath my mattress and I'm going to take some of that and give it to you? Is that what he's saying? Or is he saying that money in the future, which I'm going to be earning from all my earnings later on, I'm going to give you some of that? Or is it money in a bank? What does he mean? What does the person mean?
You might as well say you made a cheshbon to see if you could do it.
Yeah, Kobe, he's got a stash and he's thinking to himself, over the next 6 months I'll be able to live comfortably based on other earnings. So it could be either. Just the question is there going to be a discussion? Would mechusa amona apply in a situation where the thing which he said you're going to give is a davar shelo bala olam or a davar she'ena b'rishusa? We know that you can't make a kinyan on something that you don't yet own, or you can't make a kinyan on something that doesn't yet exist in the world. What's the reason why you can't do a kinyan in such a situation? You haven't got it yet. So the Rishonim bring, and the reason is because there's no smichus das amongst the parties. Since the item's not yet here, or since the person doesn't yet own it, then there's no smichus das. So the poskim discuss that even though there would be no smichus das with regards to the kinyan actually working on such an item, that if you pledge to give such an item to someone, there would still be mechusa amon. And the problem is, how can that be? Because if there's no smichus das for the kinyan to be chal, then how can there be smichus das for the recipient to be causing mechusa amon?
It's not a kinyan mechusa.
Yeah, but the whole side of mechusa amon is smichus das.
Kinyan, you've got to have something there.
No, but
it's just simply you've given your word, you're going to do something. That's
yeah, but when does it apply? When does mechus amon apply? We said it only applies if the recipient believes he's going to get it. And we said the Gemara calls that when the recipient has smichas das. Even though it's not a kinyan. Yeah? So the poskim explain and they say that there's different levels to smichas das. So even though there isn't enough smichas das to create a kinyan, there's still enough smichas das for the recipient to cause what's it called mechusa amona. And just to
people buy a house.
Yeah.
Nobody hasn't got the money. It's going to get a mortgage. Yeah. The smichas das is going to get it, and somehow someone's going to get it. What you just now said, if he hasn't got the money, spell the smichas das.
Depends on which case. What's the story? What's the case that you're talking about when the person says he's going to agree to buy a house?
In this case, the case Mike was here, promised.
Offer accepted? Yeah?
Even though it hasn't got the money now,
yeah.
There's no smichus das.
Yeah. The poskim do discuss when a person's, let's say, got an offer accepted in a house, is there smichus das or is it always subject to contract?
Correct.
And then it's only once there's a contract will there be smichus das. Yeah, that's going to be a very important point to discuss coming up soon when we talk about situations that change, because often houses go on the market and people put an offer in and the offer is accepted and then the mortgage schleps till people get the mortgage and then the price of the property has gone up in value and there's new offers and people don't want to lose out and there's lots more money involved. Can you back out? That's going to be one of the shailas coming up soon. So the next point which Mr. Fulder pointed out was that here there was a situation change. Yeah, so let's assume that in the case of Chaim, there was mechusa amona, because there was smichus das. Shimon, he thinks he's getting his $30,000. Why does he think he's getting $30,000? Because Chaim was serious about it. Yeah, but there was a situation change. Change in circumstances. What changed? He was demoted from his job. Yeah? Is that enough grounds to back out and to absolve him from the issa of Mechus Amon. Sorry? Oh, so you're in good company, big machlokas. And the real question is, we get down to the root of the inyan, is what was expected of the Noisein when he made the pledge? What was the makabel? What did the recipient think when the Noisein pledged to him that he's going to give him something? Did he think that he would even follow through with this commitment in the event of a circumstance change? And he had smichus das that he was even going to be committed in that instance or not? So it might depend on the circumstance. Yeah? But that is the shayush ha-machlokas between the poskim and the Rishonim, if there's going to be Mechus HaAmona in such a situation when there's a circumstance change. So how do we pass in the halacha when it comes to a circumstance change? The terminology used in halacha is something called trei tara. When there's two prices, when the price change. And how do we pass in the halacha? So the Shulchan Aruch, and in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah brings both days. The Beis Yosef also brings both opinions. The Ramah brings both opinions, and he says to be machme. He says to be machme that even if there's a change of circumstance, you're still on mechuyev to follow through with your pledge and honor it, and there will be mechus amon. Whereas the Shach brings a bach that there's a Yerushalmi, we can back out in a circumstance change, and the poskim, a lot of them nowadays bring from a chasam sofa that you can be mekel in a circumstance change to back out. Even though the majority opinion of the Rishonim is to be machmir, a lot of the poskim are soimach on this chasam sofer to be mekel.
Does it not depend on the circumstance? So, for example, if you're selling a house for 100,000, so it's gone up to 120,000, so you've lost 20,000, but you're still selling it out. In this situation with Chaim, he's not got the money, you're going to pull him down under.
So why can't he make a payment plan?
He can't do anything. He's not,
so it depends, well. You're saying a very good point. It might depend on the extremity of the change in circumstance. That's mamish what Rabbi Yosef Fleischman in the Sefer Mishnah Yosha, he makes a framework. He says that in a situation, because Rabbi Yosef Fleischman, he's very, very against the makel based on the psak of the Chasam Sofer. He says we've got Klali HaPsak, and we normally, and there are Mars Machmir, and Roy Roshayma Machmir, he wants to be Machmir. But he says it's within a framework. The framework is, if there's a minimal change in circumstance, which all these terms are very relative, what's minimal, but you'd have to go to a Rav and based in maybe into Dayanim, into Mamish Dan, exactly what's called minimal. But he says a framework. If it's a minimal change in circumstance, then you should definitely be machmir. He says there's nothing to rely on. He says if it's a medium-sized change of circumstance, he says that's where the machlokes was. There's mekilim and there's machmirim. He says if it's a huge change of circumstance, he said even the machmirim would say that you can be mekel. So it seems to be that what does the Olam think? The Olam thinks that in this case, it's a huge change in circumstance, it's category number three, or it's number two.
Number three.
So we'd really have to know a bit more details about the case to know exactly how bad his life is going to be, if he's going to have to stick with this. But just a fourth point, just to move on. One thing we have to consider is that when you say you're going to support someone in yeshiva and you commit to that, what is that? Maybe that commitment is soccer or a neder l'dvar mitzvah, and it might have a whole different set of rules. The Shulchan Aruch brings in this discussion of mechus amoni, he says that if the recipient is an oni, then you can't back out, even if it's a large makana and it doesn't fit into the klolim of mechus amoni. He said that if the recipient is an oni, then you're mechuyev to follow through. So how would people consider supporting a bocher in yeshiva, the yeshiva of his choice, that he's been quite particular about, that he wants specifically this yeshiva, but his family don't have so much money, he can't afford it, but he could go and work, he's not saying he's unable. How would people consider this? This is a very, I've asked quite a few different people, different Talmid HaChomim, how to look at this situation. And in the event that we would establish that it's a taka, a neder, then to back out from it is going to be very, very hard.
Yeah.
That would be what we're saying. You have to work it out. Yeah. So if we just leave it off, that Mesama would say there was Smichus Das in the case of Chaim. There was Smichus Das. There was a circumstance change, so there might be ability to be Somach on Trey Tower, like the Mekilim. Or it might even be category number three, where it's so crazy that no one would expect the commitment in such a situation. But alternatively, it might be more Machmeh here, and he won't be able to get out of it because it might be a Neder. Just an interesting case where just something to think about, you could take away with yourselves today, is that there's a Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, he brings a story. It brings out Shmak the colors in these halachas. He says that there was a lady in a shop, and she overheard another lady there saying that she wants to buy some oil. And the shop owner said, "I'm really sorry, we've run out of oil." So lady number one, who overheard this, goes to lady number two and says, "You can come to my house. I've got a bottle of oil there. I'll give you one. I see you need one. You can come to my house and I'll give you the oil." Lady number one, this very a nice lady who made the offer, went home, and her mother comes knocking on the door and she says, "Have you got any oil? Have you got any oil?" And she opens the cupboard hoping there's two and there's only one there. And now she has the dilemma. Can she back out of her pledge to give the oil to lady number two in order to be mekayem mitzvah skividah here? Or is there an issue of mechus amana? What does Zayin think? Mechus amana? Half each?
It's already doesn't belong to her, but she's already more or less given it.
Wow. So the Mishnah's, the Shut Mishnah's Yaivot, Mamish says what you're saying. And he brings a riot from a Tosos, that Yesh Tavarim Shadikdin Ba'amir, in the Ksubas of Kofbeis, that this concept of Mechusa Amona, it's so far-reaching, that just with a verbal commitment alone, then it's transferred ownership to the recipient. To the extent that the lady number two, like you say, owns a bottle of oil. Even though lady number one can be choza, we said that mechusa amana is an issa. But if you would choose to retract, then it would actually work. The retraction would work. The reneging would work. But nevertheless, it's common. That's a very good point that you're bringing. So that would be a very good nakuda in this shayla. But other people have asked, what would be a halacha if a person would pledge a matana and sadly there would be nifta?
It's a kind of a mix.
Yorshim. Would the Yorshim have to be mechuyev?
It's a kind of a mix.
Mitzvah is a kind of a mix. Let's say it's not a case where there was a mitzvah. If it's konoi, like you're suggesting, then you would seemingly be mechuyev to give it because the person owns it in some fashion. But Rav Kiva Eger on the Haggadah and Shulchan Aruch, he says that a Yerush is not mechuyev to give it. So Rabbi Zilberstein, he declares, would this make a difference to the shayla about the oil or not? So that's an interesting question. That's an interesting topic. So I just want to move on to the topic about children. This is just the final point. A very, very important point. The Gemara in Sukkah says a very, 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 very important yesoid in chinuch, a very important yesoid in dealing with children. It says, "Va'amar Rav Zeira, lo leima inish liyanuka diyavlecham midi, v'lo yoyevle, mishum da'asi lagmure shikra." The poskim say, this Gemara is telling us that a person should never tell a child they're going to give them something and then not give it to them. Because if you do that, you're teaching them to lie. Case closed. Post can say, in a situation, matana maruba, matana muetes, whether there is exception, no exception, when you told your children you're going to give them an afikoman present, even if it's a big one, you have to give them what you told them you're going to give them. Our post can discuss, why don't we bring it from other psukim? Why do we say limdu l'shoinam davar sheker? We should just say mitvah sheker tirchok. we should, one of the poskim asked the kasha that every child is an oni. So you should be mechuyav mishum neder. So all the poskim explain that the case of the Gemara is talking about a situation where you're not mechuyav al pi din to be mekayim what you said. For example, like we just gave, where it's a matana maruba, and you were mechuyav generally in a situation of mechus amana to be given matana maruba. But nevertheless, there's a chiyav not to teach your children to lie.
Are we talking specifically about a child who's not yet bar mitzvah?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure. I don't know when the chiyav chinuch stops. But I'm at 30. Yeah. Yeah.
The Muslims about
Christmas.
They
cross the river, pays himself, pay a fortune of money.
Yeah.
You don't include to pay the amount.
The amount, yeah.
Same story.
You can say Mashat Anibah. You can't do that to a child. That's what we're learning. The one of the posts can actually speak out that the case where the child is the case where he's not mechuyav to give it to the child is a case where the child is misrashal b'limudah. Such a situation where a child is supposed to be learning and he's not learning very well. So there's a halacha when in certain situations when you hire workers and they back out of the job, then you can lie to the worker that you're going to give them extra, you're going to pay them double, get them to do the job, and then afterwards you tell them, I'll just give me the correct amount of money. That's how they make them the Gemara. Yeah, and they say that's the case. And nevertheless, there's something on top of that, which is Agmar Leshakra, which even in a situation where Alpi Me'ikad Adin, you're not Mechuyav to give the child what you told him, since you can't teach him to lie, then you're Mechuyav to pay it to him. That's just one of the cases, very, very good. Sure. I'll tell you something very interesting. The post can say that. First of all, you might not be Ne'eman in a situation, depends. But there's a